I'd like to call this meeting of the Taney County Commission to order this 28th day of July, 2011. I think first order of business is agenda requests, which would be for next week's agenda, correct? You know, I thought it was really a good idea in visiting other counties that some of them do them 2 weeks at a time. Maybe that's something in the future we could take a look at. Jillian, do you have anything additional that we need to add for next Monday?
No, sir, I do not. I could give you the list of what we have at this time.
You know what? What?
The one you have before you is this week.
If you would, go ahead and do that.
Okay. Of course, starting at 8:30, gentlemen, is going to be the preliminary study.
Okay.
Public comment. At 9 o'clock, we're going to start the commission meeting. First thing on the agenda is going to be the independent auditing service bid opening, followed by F Highway and 160 Public.
Hold on.
Yes, sir.
Independent audit services bid opening?
It's due on Friday. I thought it was supposed to be open Friday, but I made a mistake.
Friday of next week?
No.
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
You did the bid, though, right?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
Oh, now let me back up. What is scheduled for tomorrow?
Bid opening at 1 o'clock, I believe.
And where and who's supposed to do that?
Well, it's on your agenda.
Well, the reason I ask that is there's no county commission scheduled for tomorrow. It's BOE all day, and we need to know here if we need to schedule this in.
I'll look at it. Well, maybe it was due tomorrow. The opening is Monday. I don't know.
Well, would you follow up on that, Rick? So that
look, because it's on the website.
I mean, we can work in a short 5-minute session if we have to.
Rick, you wrote it.
I wrote it.
Okay.
And I want whatever's on the website what we need to go by because that's what everybody has used.
In a few minutes, will you bring that back to us?
Can you go on the website right now?
I can.
If it's something though that we need to post, I have to do it 24 hours in advance.
Did they not just, what time of year did they perform the audit?
Ron, usually they do that in February, March. They do their field work, and then they begin to work through that. Normally, they are finished with ours. We've seen the draft copy probably a month ago. I think I sent that to you, just NDA on it.
I have read what they sent us, yes.
The website says bids should be submitted by July 29th at 1 p.m.
That's
bids
true.
Will be opened August 1st at 9 a.m. is what it says on the website.
I knew it was on there, so I was looking at it. Tomorrow's the deadline for them getting turned in at 1 o'clock.
And that's basically how it's worded, sir, as far as the opening goes, is for Monday morning.
So they're going to be received today.
No, tomorrow.
Tomorrow, by you, to you.
Nikki has one right now. I hope we can get two more, I hope.
Okay. Thank you.
Would you like for me to continue, sir?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. We've got the F Highway and 160 property. Mr. Kuntz.
Looks like he's asking for 15 minutes, Ron.
Okay.
Which should be fine.
We've got the opening tipping services bid for the rebid.
Okay.
That's a 15-minute request as well.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
Do we need 15 minutes for that?
No. But it's the same 15 minutes as the F Highway, so
okay.
We'll be fine.
Okay.
Next, sir, for an hour, we've got the budget review discussion.
just for an example here, right now we are scheduled to be done by 9:30 with everything she said so far. We'll have a 30-minute break in there. Because budget review discussions are supposed to start at 10 o'clock.
Yes, sir.
And with BOE, I have done nothing to prepare for that. I know we rescheduled it, but I haven't done anything.
There is something I need to do to prepare for that. I would like to know what that would be.
Well, I mean, I just got to spend time looking at it before I can even have a discussion is the problem.
I have no desire to have it on. I'm not ready to talk about it.
You want to push it back another week, you think?
Or? No, I don't want to pick a date until we're ready. I just...
Guys, I can tell you, I have already sent out the first round to all the different elected officials, department heads, asked them to begin to think about it. I already got two of them back in already, so we've got some people that are thinking about that already, and that's good.
You've already got back in their budget request for 2012?
I have two of them back in already, that's correct.
Give me the deadlines on that, Rick.
September 1. I think the statute says if it's not back in by September 10, then I am to put those estimates in.
Okay. We'll... I know you sent that out. With that, are there blank copies of individual budgets to be filled out?
Those are... The columns are set there that we have the actuals for the previous 2 years and the actuals so far in 2011, and then there is a request for 2012 column there to fill out, send back.
So I can go in, I can print out anything that has to do with the county commission, and then create new lines if I want new lines to request them, and
you can request them or
delete, or what I'm trying to do is it's something that I can work with. And okay.
Yes, it is.
Okay, thank you. I hadn't apologized. I've not opened that yet.
So, Mr. Hausman, are you wanting to reschedule that and leave the date open?
I don't want to reschedule it. I don't want to. If we're not going to have a presentation from Rick on where we're at in the budget and talk about revenues and expenditures, and if none of us have prepared for the meeting, I don't think we should have one.
I mean, my thing is, I think we probably need to reschedule it. I would just like to put a date with it so that we have some something for us to keep on striving for.
Okay, what is it that you would like to have accomplished at the meeting?
From my perspective, the one thing that I would like is I would like your input and anybody else's input that has anything into it as far as revenues, what we think the economy is going to do. The other things come from the elected officials, department heads. But we, you, me, the commission, we gather information and try to decide what our revenues are going to be.
I understand. You're talking about 2012.
Yes.
He's talking about 2011.
I want to do a State of the Union, basically. What are we sitting... Compared to what we thought we'd be sitting.
And I could do that for you.
I mean, we're halfway through. If we need to tighten our belt, if we, you know, we've made some massive cuts. And if we're ahead or behind our projections, I want to be able to make some adjustments halfway through versus once a year. So my hope was to focus on the 11 budget and where we are compared to where we thought we'd be at this stage. That's what I'd like to do. And then at the very end, possibly talk about 2012, comparing to that.
Basically, doing
both is what I'd like to do.
And that would be fine with me. I really am hoping that you guys on a monthly basis are looking at major expenditures and funds that we have there.
I know I am. I'm sure everyone is looking at our reports. But I would
be more than glad to do that if you want me to.
August 18th, August 25th, those are Thursdays. The reason I say that, next 2 weeks are going to be short weeks.
Right. August 18th?
Is that all right with you?
Mm-hmm.
Can we shoot for afternoon? I've got that OCAC meeting at 9 o'clock on the 18th.
Would you like it to start at 1 p.m., Mr. Hausman?
Once if I'm in May, how about you, Ron?
Yes. Danny?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
Can we title that Budget Review and projections? That way we can cover whatever we want.
That would be fine with me, yes. Good
with you guys. It's review of 2011 and projections of 2012.
Yes, sir.
Now, I know we've done this twice. We've invited elected officials to come to the meeting. So I don't know how many had committed to come tomorrow, but if we send out the notice this morning, then they'll be ready. They can make the adjustments. But
yes, sir.
And what is it that you want from the elected officials on August 18th?
But we had invited them the first time and the second time to talk about where they're sitting with their 11 budget when we had our first discussion regarding this. My thing is, I'm going to be looking at it as a whole. I don't know if I need individual input. I have time now to look through the documents, and if I have an individual department that's not related to me, I can ask those questions and be prepared. So I personally don't need any elected officials here unless they want to be here. But I just want to give direction to Julian, who is she sending this invite out to?
Well, I would like, because we're talking about two different things, I'd like to take care of the 2011 at that time. Then I would like to look at 2012 when Rick gets all of his, everybody that turns in a budget by his required date, which is September the 10th or the 15th. I thought it was the 15th.
September 1 is the deadline, but it says like there's not anybody can buy it.
Okay, any week in September then is what I would say. I would like to look at 2012 and what their budget request is and our projections of what's going to take place. At that time, we will have a report on August revenues and have a better idea of where we're at. So that's where I would like to go. I would like strictly to talk about 2011 and then go with 2012 projections in September. Because that's the statutory duty of that Rick has to abide by. Did you hear that? Do you agree with any of that at all?
To have a meeting in the September time frame?
No. What I'm saying is, in 2011, at this meeting,
right,
we review where we're at, what needs to take place for the rest of this year.
Right.
In 2011, it's a statutory duty that they have their budget request in by September 1st. We have an idea after the first week in September what the August revenues were. We have a better idea of where we're headed this year, plus where the budget lines and budget requests are for next year. So I would rather split the two up and have a review of 2011 and where we're at this date, and then in 2012 go through the entire thing for.
Well, here's the question. Do we need to have a commission meeting about the whole thing? Is that something just individually we sit down with Rick and go through with, and maybe we forget about 2011 and we focus on 2012?
Well, I understand what you're saying. We can utilize the figures from 2011 to focus on 2012. Maybe the 18th of August is too early to have this. Maybe, and then again, it's just a prompt for everybody to get ready for September. I want to focus on what's going to happen next year.
Okay.
Well, right now, I'm not at all sure what's going to happen next year. And there's a lot of changes, my opinion, still need to be made within the county system. That's not going to be a popular thing, but maybe it's time to have the discussion.
Mr. Houseman, then how would you like for me to title it?
I'm not even sure where to have it.
Okay.
Well, I don't want to go into a lot of details about what we've done, but I will say that we had made some projections of where our decisions would put us in July, the first week in July, and a review of where we need to be. I know that there are things that need to be addressed in Road and Bridge that are budgetary items that need to be looked at as far as dollars and where we're at. Chip and seal program will be over at that time. We'll have a good idea of how much money's left. There's several things in several departments that need to be looked at like that. That's going through this in the past, I tell you, I like to know where we're at this year to make the projections for next year.
Well, as far as revenues and expenditures and following the information that Rick's been sending us, I feel I have a pretty good handle on where we're at revenue-wise and where we're at expenditure-wise. The brouhaha we're preparing to face is having a number of department heads and officers come in that will want to say we want to make major changes within 2011. We implemented in January of this year a number of changes which were not popular. If you all think we need to have a discussion to reverse those changes, then we need to have a meeting. If you don't, then the question of whether or not we should have it is in the air, as far as I'm concerned. And I'm willing to do it either way. But... right now, we're scheduled to have a budget review and projection. So we'll tell us where we're at financially, publicly, which will be a recap of what you've been sending us on a monthly basis. And
can I interrupt you there, Ron, just a
yes,
second?
Yes, sir.
When you say that that's not what the purpose of this is.
What is it?
The purpose of this is, where are we at in road and bridge? What do we have to do in the future between now and the first of the year to make the budget work?
Make the budget within 2011.
Yes, because we don't. What I'm saying is there's
in
things
road and bridge,
that
I mean that was. I mean, we can do that in any road and bridge meeting. Then I would say let's just cancel the meeting. I mean, because we can do that road and bridge and road and bridge department. There's no reason to have a big budget discussion if you're wanting road and bridge. I was looking at a different angle.
I'm looking at every department. If there's something in there where the August revenues and from that point in the year are not complete, I'd like to know what needs to be how we need to make adjustments. We're not going to adjust the budget, but we need to make adjustments if we're running way over and there isn't a certain amount of stuff that's been done. So you go ahead and you guys do whatever you want to. If you want to cancel it, fine, but I want to have a meeting and find out the numbers where we're setting. Now, Jim, you understand that through the process of employees and things like that the numbers aren't really going to show until later on what we did. Because at the time that we offered such things as early retirement, those numbers aren't going to show till later on. They're not going to show the effect of on the budget until later on. But you guys do whatever you want to, and I'll just check that out.
I'll just get prepared and get with Rick, and then if I feel like I'll come back and ask for a meeting if I think there needs to be one. I don't think there needs to be one. I think we're all a little bit different than what we're trying to get to. So I'll just get prepared, get with Rick, and review everything individually with the budget officer. So going back to Monday's calendar. Either way, we're canceling that meeting.
Okay, so remove that from Monday.
No matter what, Monday on the 1st, we are not having that meeting.
That's the first thing we've agreed on there.
Okay.
Cancel that meeting.
Okay, we know we're not doing that.
All right, and we are not at this time rescheduling it for August 18th, correct, gentlemen? At this time.
How about we put it back in the folder and let's talk about next when we have our next agenda review because we'll have plenty of time.
Wonderful.
Is that all right with you?
Move on, Jillian.
Yes, sir. The next thing, gentlemen, that you guys are going to discuss for an hour is county positions.
11 o'clock.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Does that need to be moved forward? Because we don't have the other meeting at 10. I don't want to have a space in there where we...
Would you like for me to move it up to 10 o'clock?
Try to keep the flow of the meeting going so we don't have to take recesses.
Move that at 10.
Sounds good, Dan.
Staff departmental update, road and bridge. Right now, sir, we have this from 1 to 3.
That's okay with me, and it's certainly a time to talk about some of the questions that you had.
Review draft audit report. That's for 30 minutes. Would you guys like for me to move
what
that?
What time is that?
It's from 3 to 3:30.
Is that with the auditor that He's going to be here at that time?
Yeah, I don't think he'll be able to move that much company.
That's fine.
He told me he had a meeting with you guys at that time. So he's scheduled.
That's fine.
So that time
is that a meeting that is an open session or closed session from audit's perspective?
You can do that as you choose. A lot of times you go into executive session and then...
Please include in the notice that possibility exists that we may go into closed session. I know if there are personnel issues in the past when I was here and they were discussed in an audit, the commission went into closed session.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead, Rick. You had something else?
A lot of times when you first meet with the outside audit, we're going to executive session, you know, just to make sure that there's not some issue that doesn't talk about executive.
And we're allowed to do that, I know. So, and Jillian?
And that will conclude.
Let's hurriedly get through, guys, because we're running behind. Lookout Acres change order number one.
I was going to ask one thing about the agenda review. Do we want to try to schedule a couple hours with our attorney on Monday, since that's the only day next week we're meeting because of our travel schedule and with the new PNC code?
See if they're available afternoon.
Yes, sir.
Following the...
And if we need to move Road March up, work through lunch or something to get the adequate time. And I still think if you call Andy, we can move the audit. We still have... I'm looking at the timeline. We still have a 30-minute block gap in there.
Mm-hmm,
so you may want to talk to Andy and see if we can't move him forward.
If that'll work. According to Rick, he didn't think it would, but that's fine.
Can you just juggle that?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
So move Andy to 11:30.
You just look at the calendar.
Please call Andy and see if he could change his schedule. If he can't, we'll take him at the time that he is scheduled, obviously.
How much time would you like with the attorney, sir?
Jim?
I mean, I would just fill it up. I mean, it looks like, theoretically, we could have 2 hours.
And would you like for both of them to attend?
Don't you think it'd be best?
Yeah. Sir?
Let's look out Acres change orders. Just a deduct change order, actually. We're taking out the water meters that the contractor is supposed to buy. The city's going to buy them now. So the main question I have is I'm not necessarily looking for approval of this. We're just trying to figure out if the commission actually needs to sign these change orders, approve all pay apps with this job.
You have them currently scheduled for the sewer district to be making these decisions, correct?
Correct.
And
you guys are, the only question I have is you guys are on the original contract, so technically any change in the contract, theoretically you should write approve. But I don't know if you can make a motion to globally give the sewer district the power to do it or what.
Well, I think right now, since you're set up for that I don't have any problem with the change orders going before them, especially on deducts. If there is some contractual change that we need to be involved in, then I would suggest come back.
Okay. So any deducts, just let the sewer district do it. Any increases, right. Come back.
We give approval, and if we need that in the form of a motion, we'll do so.
Perfect.
Sounds good to me. It's online.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
Next is Shadow Rock Trail discussion. Jillian, you have a copy of that letter. All the behind-the-scenes work has been done. The engineers state that X amount of dollars are due and owed to the county. The question is, do we want to send an invoice or not send an invoice? I think that the wording of this letter might be changed a little bit. It needs to be, as far as I'm concerned, and I don't mind working on that.
It does need to be changed. I think... From a formality, we probably need to go ahead and create an invoice and attach it so that there's a paper trail for an accounts receivable action, but I think the letter needs to be softened a little bit yet. But, Ron, if you want to take it, I have no problem letting you run with it to reword that.
Jillian, put this on your list of items. I'll work with you on this. Let's soften this letter. Send it. Is it the wishes of this commission that an invoice be forwarded?
Yes.
It is.
Then I will do that. I will also, with your permission, send each of you an email with a suggested copy of verbiage to be sent and seek your approvals.
Great.
Why do we not have them on here?
They're at 9 o'clock. We have 3 minutes, but it should be right.
This is not right, then.
Is this posted wrong?
Jillian, I'm going to let these gentlemen come up. Mr. Erickson, Mr. Atchley? No, I've got a complete file on it right here. Thank you, though. Nothing here.
Is this Mr. Davis?
Mm-hmm.
I'm Rob
Hassel. Hi, nice to meet you.
This is Dan Strahan.
Hello, sorry.
Sorry.
Nice to meet you.
Hello.
I'm sorry, we are so squeezed, guys. But this is okay. Live, gentlemen. You are broadcasting. I know you love that, Ron. Throw me those wipes. Mr. Atchley, Mr. Erickson, let's begin.
Okay. Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you again for having us as a follow-up this morning to our Monday meeting concerning the buyout program and our emergency hazard mitigation. We have here with us today a gentleman, Mr. Mickey Davis from State and Local Emergency Management Consultants, LLC, to discuss some details of the type of service that he can provide. He's a gentleman that's been contracted by the City of Branson to handle their situation over there concerning the buyout program. And Mr. Atchley has some fairly fresh information that he's developed just yesterday that he'd like to mention before we introduce Mr. Davis.
Of course, one of the key things we talked about on Monday was in speaking with the representatives from SEMA, they've really expressed that the county's best approach is likely either to go through the local county's county of governments organization, or to look at a private contractor, primarily because the complexity of completing the benefit cost analysis and really just the complexity of the whole program. I had a conversation with Diane May yesterday evening, and she has indicated, and I think Mr. Davis will go into this in more detail, she's had some conversations with Mr. Davis, and of course, like we talked about last time, she has actually received some community development block grant funds for hazard mitigation planning. Now, she's indicated to me that the Southwest Missouri Council of Governments would be willing to complete the CDBG application, and they would be willing to run the cost-benefit analysis if we or Mr. Davis was able to provide the documentation to them needed to complete that analysis, that they do have the software that can complete the benefit cost analysis, but that they would not be able to provide the data that's needed. From my understanding, and Mr. Davis is going to know a lot more details about this, but it's my understanding, for example, when we run this benefit cost analysis, we're going to have the market value, I believe, for each house, and we're going to have the elevation of the bottom floor of each house, and also, of course, the base flood elevation. And
can I just ask one question on market value?
Oh, yeah.
How are you determining market value when it's this process? Is it an appraisal? Is it just what? Just that's one of the questions. And if whenever you can get through, I didn't want to interrupt. That was just one of the questions. The back of my head is, I see your spreadsheet. I was just curious to see. Market value, that seems to be, if people are contesting, if they're substantial or non-substantial, it's based off of that value.
Yeah. And I do apologize. I actually meant to clarify that in the spreadsheet, and I'm going to change this. This is really meant to be more of a worksheet, but this is really just the value that was established whenever we did the substantial damage determinations. My feel is potentially this value may be low even, from what I understand. In 2008, FEMA had recommended to us that we utilize a value of $80 per square foot. So really that figure is just taking the square footage of each house and multiplying it by the $80.
That's fine. You explained it.
Yeah.
So I didn't derail your presentation.
Okay. Oh no, okay. And really, I didn't have a whole lot more. I think I was going to, you know, kind of introduce Mickey Davis, and then if there are specific questions, I can sure answer those or try to answer those.
Let me ask a question, make a statement at the same time. From your last presentation, really we were led to this point because of recommendations through SEMA.
Yes, correct? That's correct.
And SEMA said that we feel it's in your best interest to either work through Council of Local Governments, which we found have done some of this, but not all of this.
Correct.
Through Diane May, correct?
Yes.
And or companies such as the one that this gentleman is involved with.
Yes.
That specialize in exactly this. And that was their recommendation.
Yes. And, okay. And part of that was due to the complexities of this program. And part of it's due to the time frame. We have to submit a notice of interest by August 17th. They're not actually going to hold a training session for completing these benefit cost analysis until the first week of August. And so there was really a concern that, being really frank, that the staff with SEMA kind of indicated, well, you're likely not going to want to send staff to this training session because hopefully this will be something that you just do on this one occasion where a council of governments or a firm such as the one that Mr. Davis is working for, they do this on a regular basis.
Then I will wager that we're going to get more answers to our questions than we ever hope for. Could we have you join us, sir? Would you like to step up to the podium? Or if you like, we can let you sit over here and I can move a microphone there, whichever.
This is fine. Well, thanks. I know you're tight on the schedule, so I'm going to kind of cut through the...
Actually, we're doing okay now that we've got past what we had to get to get past earlier. So.
Okay. My name is Mickey Davis, and I'm with State and Local Emergency Management Consultants. Our headquarters is in Topeka, Kansas. I'm located in Kansas City, Kansas, but also have a place out here on Indian Point. So coming to Taney County or Branson or Spohn or any of those, it's kind of a blessing for me because it's closer to another home that we have. So our company is made up of emergency management specialists. Our the other owner is a woman that's been with the state of Kansas for over 20 years, left to become a consultant, was in the state emergency management department, was over mitigation planning. I have about 22 years. I was emergency manager in Wyandotte County. Did the first buyout in 1993. It was the first one done in Kansas, second one done in the United States. A lot of things have changed since then. Since then, I've did several buyouts for Wyandotte County. And since I've been in the consultant, we've probably done over 10 projects. And purchased over 400 homes combined with those different projects.
Just for our edification, Wyandotte County is just above Johnson County?
Just north.
Just north.
Just north, east. Borders the Kansas-Missouri line.
Thank you, sir.
And that flooding was along the Missouri and Kansas River back in 1993 in that county. The project is guidelines are just a little bit tweaked by each state can put a little bit of different twist into it. We're familiar with all the federal guidelines. The good thing about this project in Missouri is FEMA Region 7 is where it reports to. And we've probably did at least 15 mitigation buyouts. And we've probably done 25 other types of mitigation projects. And they all flow through Region 7. They go to your state, and then they go to Region 7 for a final review. So we have a real good understanding. I have met Sheila Huddleston at SEMA, respect their professionalism, and kind of understand their guidelines. With that said, the project can be maybe not impossible to do by people that haven't done it. I don't want to say that. But the real key is there's a lot of detail and a lot of steps, and if you get out and kilter on some of those steps, it can create delays, number one, in your grant application, or it can create delays with the state, and then ultimately all those delays impact your citizens that you're trying to help. Our goal in our company is try to be a solution company, complete our work on time, get results for you, because we actually work for the counties or the cities. We don't work for the individuals, but we're delivering the service and helping you deliver that service to your citizens. So that's kind of the process we use. There's a couple of critical issues in the projects. It's a 75-25, which I think you're totally aware of. And the only way that you can match 25 with other federal dollars, and I think you might be familiar with this, is the Community Development Block Grant Program. in other areas we do consider, we do work with community development block grant, coordinated community development block grant in Kansas on about 300 homes. A couple issues right up front that I want to point out. The deadline, like they mentioned, is August 17th for your notification of interest. In that notification and interest, there's two critical things. One, you kind of have to say how the match is going to be applied. Who, you know, is the owner going to pay for it? Is the county government going to pay for it? Or are you going to use CDBG? Now, once you turn your notice of interest into Missouri, then they review all the notice of interest. They do it a little different in Missouri. They try to get everybody's notice of interest for flooding under the disaster 1980, which is what you're under, which includes people in the southwest portion of your state. Just to clarify, the CDBG has $10 million set aside for 1980. That doesn't include Joplin. Joplin's what we call an entitlement jurisdiction, so they get their funding direct from CDBG. The $10 million that CDBG has set aside, I talked to Andy Pappin, that's the state coordinator, very professional gentleman, has set aside $10 million for buyouts or match for public assistance. I have a document that I can leave you. It's too much to try to have you digest now, but it's pretty simple. I took out the guidelines out of the state administrative plan that they just revised. So you can look at it, and it'll tell you the valuation criteria that CDB is going to use. And without going through all those steps, you know, I'd like for you to independently look it over. You could even talk to Diane. There is some concern whether they're going to have to get them all in, see how much people are interested, and then evaluate and see who gets the money. So just applying for CDBG in this case doesn't mean you'll qualify. There's factors in ways. Do you have other ways to fund it? Here's the dilemma. The CDBG program's out for public comment till August 2nd. Then they're waiting for some waivers. They're just normal waivers, but they've got to be done when they do a disaster buyout. That'll probably take another week. They've been in. So it's going to probably be anywhere from 7 to 10 days after August 2nd before they come out with an application. Then their application period is going to go to 10/31, August 31st. So you can see the dilemma. On August 17th, you have to turn in to SEMA your notice of interest and say, how would you match the 25%? And then between the time the app comes out, whenever it comes out for CDBG and 1031, if you want to apply for that to get your 25% match, you have all the way to 31st to get your app in. Now, once you send the notice of interest in to SEMA, SEMA will review and send back to the jurisdiction that they want to get an application from, a formal application. Now, I think they're used to taking, once people get the formal application starting. What we do, especially down here where it's a little further after the disaster, we start working on the application once we turn the NOA in. Because we want to be ready when the application hits the ground to knock it out quickly. Because we think that these delays just create more friction between the citizens. So the only thing you could do in this particular case that I can think of is do the NOI and state one or two options. If you want the homeowner to pay it, you could put the homeowner will pay the 25% out of their proceeds as the non-federal match, and we will apply for a CDBG grant. That would probably suffice for the notice of interest because you're doing one or two things and you have a fallback if the CDBG doesn't get approved. When we send it in to FEMA, that's going to be a tricky deal. They usually don't like options like that, but we might even be able to suffice that. Otherwise, the real con on the CDBG, the pro is The citizens could get more money, have no obligation out of their pocket. That's one of the cons. Or one of the pros for it. The cons are you're going to have to wait till 31st, sometime find out if you're going to get CDBG, and then you have to go through a process for CDBG, you know, more publications and stuff that are different than FEMA, unfortunately. No two federal programs ever come together very often on procedures and policies. I'm sure you're aware of that. And so that's just fact, and it's out there. And like I said, I'll leave you a sheet. I cut out of the administrative plan. There's $10 million, so you'll see that it's not me talking. I cut out the evaluation criteria that they have now. Now, when they do the policy in 10 days or so, it might have a little more detail. So that's how we get to the non-federal match. Now, eligible applicants and what we put in the grant. And basically that goes to what residents could qualify and how do you as a jurisdiction want to go forward. There's what we call benefit cost analysis that has to be done on any mitigation project, whether it's a safe room buyout. The exception on buyouts, any property that's been determined substantially damaged, over 50%, it would cost over 50% by a contractor to repair the damaged portion, or if they ever add on. If it costs more than 50% of the value, then the floodplain manager, in this case Mr. Ashley, would send them a letter, say you've been substantially damaged. Any property that's substantially damaged is exempt from the benefit cost analysis, or what they say, they don't say exempt, they just say you qualify the benefit cost analysis just with that letter. So, scenario one is if you just did the 9, 10, however many you got that are substantial damage, we put the pictures together, we put the documentation together with the letter, that's the BCA. You move forward. Now, ones that aren't substantial damage, you got to get to a BCA 1-to-1. So, to do that BCA, you're going to need the elevation of the lowest floor. FEMA says that it's got to be done by a reputable source. A lot of times they want what we call a floodplain certificate. That's usually got to be done with a surveyor. That's expensive. Talk to Bob about maybe your engineer office can do another level. But we got to get those quickly. And because we want to aggregate, if we just take the substantial and put them in, that has to be a separate application. But there could be more benefit on the ones that got substantially damaged, and they might help carry some of them that aren't substantially damaged. So if you said, I want to try to do as many that would qualify under the BCA, we would have to get all those elevations of the 38 properties in question. Then we would get the values, work with Bob, get the values, and then we would go through, get the base flood elevation. So if first floor is down here at 950, base flood elevation is 965, that means we got a 15-foot gap there. The more that gap is, the better chance of BCA. And then we look at the cumulative damage that we have a record. And I know you're newer to the floodplain, but we'll take any damage that has been documented for each structure, and we'll use that as the damage estimate to go into the BCA. Whatever comes out in that BCA ultimately has to get to the state. They have to review it, make sure it comes to, you know, the 1-to-1 or better. And then those properties can be put in the grant application, sent to FEMA, and they're going to review the BCA. So the scope of work that has got to be determined is kind of those two factors. The other thing you run into a little bit, when you try to use substantial to help carry some that aren't substantial, a lot of times FEMA says they have to be kind of close together. And I'm not saying next to each other. If there's a couple over here, then they're going to have to stand alone. You're going to have to look at them separately.
You mean by separate application? What do you mean?
No, you would have to look at the BCA separate. So if I had nine substantial and they're kind of in a, I don't know.
Same street.
Yeah, and then I have 10 or 15 that aren't, that are within three or four blocks, six blocks. I can take all those and put them in one. But if I got two 10 miles away.
Okay.
I think we've had that resolved.
What we did have a concern early on talking to. Well, I think I've gotten this clarified through Sheila. I had a concern early on in conversations with them. The majority of our properties are in one area,
right?
But we do have a few. The majority of these fall within near Hollister, but we do have a certain number that fall closer to Branson. And in talking to Sheila, she said as long as they fall within the same geographic region of the county, and as long as it's the same flooding source, that we can apply for all of these under the same application.
Well,
was her opinion.
Right.
Yeah.
And so she did not see it as a concern.
I think we're talking about I agree with what she was saying. The only thing I'm saying is potentially we have to do a separate little BCA in that. We can put them together in one application. There's no question.
I got a few questions because I'm really I'm struggling on this. The BCA, clarification,
no,
Mr. Davis. The BCA is required for properties that are not substantially damaged.
Yes.
Okay, so if you're substantially damaged, BCA is not required at this stage. Is that correct?
That's correct, other than if you decide to take the ones that aren't.
But don't I just want to talk on that.
Right. You are 100%
okay,
correct
here's,
in your
here's the question
in
I've
your
got.
Statement.
The market value, I'm going back to market value because when is the market value a factor doing the BCA for the non-substantially damaged?
When we conduct the BCA, you got to have a value.
Okay, that value, is that by an appraiser?
Here's a way you can determine fair market value. You can take you can use this approach not only for the BCA, but you can use this approach for purchase, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'll try to make it as simple as I can. There's like two or three options. Obvious one is you can get an appraisal.
Okay.
Most people aren't going to want to get an appraisal when they're doing the BCA because it's costly and it's way at the early end and who wants to pay that. The second option, you can take the assessor's value, and in this case, you could take the assessor's value, talk to a realtor, and the realtor might say, I've done them all the way up to 25%. They evaluate. Do a little sampling, you know, not an appraisal, just a sampling. They come back to us and say, you know, most properties are selling for 25% over the assessed value. Okay?
Okay.
You can use that number.
Okay?
Okay? And really, those are the two approaches. Now,
and this is why I got a question, and I don't want to pick on any one house.
Well, first, the question is, we've got some latitude in how those are established. Is what
you have two ways, one or two ways.
Okay, I mean, we have one house that before the damage is the value was $245 on the assessor's valuation. I know for a fact it was listed for over $800,000. Okay, my question is, a house like that, wouldn't it skew all of the non-assessed, wouldn't it skew all of the non-substantially damaged because we're putting one application together?
Yes.
Guys, I know, I'm just going to throw this out. I know Branson, they didn't touch non-substantially. And my concern is we're going to go through a lot of energy and efforts and not one of those are going to get helped. I hate to say it that way, but the reality is we're trying to help those that we can help, and I really think the more I learn about the non-substantially classified houses, I don't see how we can help them.
Which particular one was it? And I answered that without knowing, so I want you to know that. But
I don't want to.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, I'm not going to specifically.
Let me kind of use that. Let me just try to tie back into that just for a second. What they did is they put it on the market. So unfortunately, that has no real defined, what we consider fair market value is what a willing, able, you know, you know that.
I don't want to get into that because that lends it a bigger discussion.
I guess what I'm saying, it's a policy to see, you're right on the area that we want to see the commission is going in the policy. I guess what I'm saying is you do the BCA, and you got to do it off of some knowledge you have now.
See, so we can just do the assessor's value plus or minus 25%, and we're good.
Yeah, or do it across the board.
That's perfect.
And then,
if that's what came in.
Okay.
Yeah, and then, now, and just so you know, in defense of Bob's situation, and this was a very difficult situation you guys were put in, when you had your last flooding, I don't know when that was, Bob, and FEMA came in to help. You had some disaster assistance employees, and they came in, and they looked at it and said, oh my goodness, too many homes are going to be substantially damaged if we use your assessor value. Now, they're not supposed to do that, but they did. I mean, I'm not going to say they're not supposed to. It's just, you know, you should try to figure out what fair market value is, what it fair market value. But what they did is they used $80 a square foot. So Bob's trying to be consistent with last time and using $80 a square foot for value. And nobody knows, when you get into older homes, you don't know if that's, you know, where that's at.
Let me give you a different question, and maybe this will help me a different way. Let's say, hypothetically, there's a house that's $100,000, okay? And the question is, the buyout's going to be based off that fair market value.
Yes, sir.
You're going to get 75% of whatever we submit as the market valuation.
Well, when we submit the app,
yes,
it'll be an estimate.
Correct.
Unless we use the assessor. If we use the assessor.
No. What I'm trying to do is understand this. This may help a lot of these 38 people. If you went to these 38 people and say, okay, we show you a value of this, under the 75-25 split, you are going to be entitled to a maximum of this much money. They then will say, yes, that's good. No, that's not good. They will probably take themselves off this list, if that makes sense. Because I really think this list is this is way too long. And if people really knew the facts, more facts, you would almost have zero on this list, Bob.
And see, I've wondered the same thing. Now
can't you give an estimate to these people and say, we're going to go, if we apply, we're going after this much dollar for your value, for your house. And they'll say, that's not enough, or that's perfect, and then it's over.
Yeah. Now let me see if I can clarify a couple of things. And I think I'm going to answer your question here, Now, it's my understanding, when we run the BCA, that's not necessarily based on the appraised value, but what they would actually...
Market value.
But what they would actually receive at the end of this is based on the market value. So at that point, there would be an appraisal.
Well,
I guess what we're struggling with is the potential difference between...
people's high hopes of what they think they're going to get.
Well, maybe this will help you. In Branson, they only had 9. They're all substantial damage. They got major elevations. Between this afternoon and tomorrow, other than one, I'm meeting with them individually, and I'm going to give them full disclosure on everything. You know, 45-minute meeting. You know, I'm kind of the third party. I'm carrying it out for my client, but I want you as an owner to understand it. And if when we get done, you fully understand it, then we're going to move right on. And here's the steps, and here's how much time. If you don't think that, based on what I told you, and I'll go through how value is determined, that you don't want to do it, now's the time to move out. It is a voluntary program, so at any step they can get out, but I try to make sure they understand the facts up front. I give them a documents they can read so that they're not getting down the road and then we hand them something and they say, oh crap, if I knew that, I'd get out. So we attempt to do that. Now, to be going in kind of just briefly about our services, you can't pay out of the grant for grant development or the BCA work. So what we do is somebody hires us to manage the project. And when we say manage the project, we do everything from working with the county or the government institution. We do everything from preparing the NOI, the grant, and then we carry it out. We prepare the contracts. We coordinate the appraisals. Now, I mean, we work with the county and make sure we follow all their procedures, but we do all that. So it's like we're like a third party. So when they want to gripe about the value, they're griping at me, not the county staff. And I point out, these are the guidelines. This is why we have to do this. And so that's kind of why we use that process. But I agree with you wholeheartedly. It's very tough to get enough data to them early in the game to find out how many want to participate. Now, the substantial damage ones, they got a floodplain management issue, and some of them got to elevate a lot.
Yes.
But if somebody's close, the only time the process that Bob used, he used it uniformly and used it across the board, which is good for determination of substantial damage. But the problem lies is if people thought their value was less, they want to get in the buyout, and they're like 45%. If he used just a little tweak of process and value, they become substantially damaged. So sometimes you have to relook at the whole process of substantial damage. That's that, and like I say, the process, we carry it all the way out to grant closing. But the critical issues are exactly the one Mr. Stoffis was talking about, is what do you attempt to include in the application? And I guarantee you, no matter whether we meet with them or not meet with them, if we had the data, I could have walked in and said, guess what? Only 20 of these qualify. The rest don't. They can, you know, that way you've hung your hat on a third-party process that the federal government requires us to use. But we don't have enough data to do that right now. And the other thing is we're going to have to use a standard. We either have to use the $80 he plugged in for value, or we'd have to use the assessor, because we can't let people tell us what they think the value is, or we'll be in trouble.
Let me ask you a quick question.
Sure.
If I have a property down there, then let's say it's valued at $400,000, however that valuation was determined, and I have no flood insurance, and I'm substantially damaged. Number one, what are my options as an individual? I can voluntarily get into this program and get something, or I can get nothing.
Or
I don't have flood insurance.
Right.
Or you can't rebuild.
The only way you can rebuild is you got to elevate. And a lot of times that means tearing down and going, starting over. Every situation. They've got to, if you're substantially damaged, you can rebuild, but you got to get your lowest floor 1 foot above the base flood elevation. So if you're at 950 and the base flood elevation's 960, you got to go 11 feet high. Your lowest level's got to be 11 feet high. And if you have no insurance money and no options, that's going to be a very expensive option to hurdle the clump. And so your other what you're saying is that.
Well, so I'm faced with incredible cost that's coming out of my pocket, or potentially I might be bought out by the federal government, based upon some determination of valuation of that parcel of property.
Yes.
My concern, Ron, is as we look at this and they're listed down, and I'm glad that you said a while ago there is a factor here that they're on the value and the percentage. When we get down to the percentages where a person is right close to the 50% and something can be, or something may have been left out or something, this and that, and they can be added to substantially damaged. But where I feel for the people is once we get down to a situation to where we can't match a one-on-one, and
jeopardizes everybody that's in the non-substantially damaged. Am I right about that? Is that the way I heard that?
You could keep pulling them out.
You can pull them out. Those citizens there, if I'm 39% damaged and we went to 40%, I mean, it's, you know what I'm saying. I feel there's a large group of citizens.
I'm agreeing, but let me ask you a question here because it's about the non-substantially again. If I own a house that's valued at $250,000, okay, and I owe $200,000 on it, it's not substantially, under the non-substantially rules, I can rebuild. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, as long as...
So I don't have to raise or anything.
Okay. Exactly.
So here's my question for you is, if we submit an application and we say your house was only valued at $150,000, you're going to come up, we're going to give you 75% of the $150,000, not the $200,000 you owe or the $250,000 it was valued at. People are going to say, thank you, no thank you. I mean, if we already know that, we should just go, Bob, you should go tell them, this is what we're shooting for you. If this is not even enough, just tell me now. We can stop the process. Because I really think this list is going to go away. I'm looking at the values, and I'm not going to pick anybody out, but, I mean, I've been down there enough. We've all been down there enough.
Well, I think there are some people, not all, but there are some people who see an opportunity in a bad economy in their minds to receive a large sum of money for a home that they have that's in not such a great area as far as flooding, obviously.
75% of their perceived value.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. We get back to them and say, the real value is this is what we're shooting for. They're going to say, that's not a good deal. I'll fix it up myself and try to resell it.
I agree with you. But if I'm listening to exactly what he's saying and what we've chatted about before, yes, we could put everybody in here. We could continue sticking into the formula until we hit that magic number and it picks up X amount of people. We're looking at the figures that you've got here based on what these values are and the percent damage. I mean, there's a whole lot of people that are under 40%.
With the value, yes. With the values, with
and
the values.
The highest we've got is at 57%, and that's in the substantially damaged. It's not 80%, it's not 90%. And if you had those higher figures, that's really going to help,
pull
a number of others up. Even the substantially damaged.
Now, these are separate applications, correct?
No.
It's one application.
Yeah, it's all one application.
One application.
I'm really leaning towards substantially damaged properties.
Knowing how we figure the ratio, this BCA, mm-hmm. It's got to be based off of that market value. And if we establish a market value that's different than they're expecting, they're going to say, pull me out. And if, as you pull these people out, it goes back to Ron's statement. Some of these people are looking for an economic help. But they're thinking 75% of the market value, my market value,
in their mind,
versus what the reality is.
Well, and see, that's the thing, too, and that's been the concern from the beginning, is I don't even know what the $80 a square foot, how close we are to the actual market value of these structures.
I don't even know how they came up with it. The key, Bob, do you know, if you run any numbers, if you would have used the assessors, and even if you added 20, 25% onto the assessor's value, you have any clue what that would have done?
Well, I've listed all the assessor's values here mm-hmm. for each one of these.
Wow.
And they vary considerably.
Wow.
Some of them are half of the values I came out with.
Now, are these assessor values including the land and improvements?
No, this is just strictly the improvements. This is just the value of the house. I think potentially even my market value may potentially be low for that area, from what I understand.
Here's one of the things that I know some people have been down there doing when the first
water event happened and was working inside. And you got to understand that the assessor's value is the outside appearance and dimensions.
Sure.
Some of these homes inside are, I mean, you can't place $80 a square foot and even touch anywhere close to what the value is.
Houses are
well, here's a question for you. And this is, Ron and I were just talking about this. And I heard something Bob said and it didn't register right. The BCA is based off the total valuation including land. Is that correct?
The BCA is off of the
market value including the land.
You're doing the structure. You just did the structure, right?
This was
just BCAs are done just off the structure.
But the market.
That's the way you did it, right?
Well, that's how we did the substantial damage determination.
Substantial damage determination are done off the structure. The value they receive is land and structure.
And so the non-substantial, you did the same thing.
Yes.
Okay, so the 75% buyout is 75% of the market value?
Fair market value, land and structure.
Exactly.
Everything so but everything can be included, close. But they're DOPs.
But the BCA, okay.
So the BCA said, I got a structure, and the floodplain manager's got to say it's worth X, and then determine, usually you use a number factor, you go in, and did you use the estimator?
Yes.
Yeah. There's an estimator and you plug in for your local jurisdiction, it pops out a number. I always tell people, if you're 45% or above, that thing's close enough it could go either way. People can come in and say, you know, if, let's say, that, and I'm even going to look at the names and stay out of that, but let's look at somebody that's 45% or above, and they don't have any insurance and they can't make it work. And they come into Bob and say, you know, are you sure your figures that you use are right? I think I might be substantially damaged. And let's say he says, okay, I'll take another look at it, and all once they're up over 50, okay? Now they're eligible for the buyout and put in the grant. Now, you guys make the decision whether you want to use an appraisal approach for fair market value, or you want to use an assessor approach. So he could use one approach for the BCA, and then you use another approach when you're talking about what you're going to pay, because they're two separate animals.
But don't we have to have that money listed in the original August 17th
estimate
that we send in?
Estimate. But in here, that's why the state likes when you use the assessor value plus a percent, because then there's no factor. By that, whatever the assessor value in 25%, whatever it is today, that's what it'll be in October. So that's what a lot of states like to do. But I'm not going to say there's a lot of sub-applicants that use the appraisal approach. So on the appraisal approach, you know, we kind of pad the application and we tell the state, got this padded a little bit because we don't want to, you know, what we don't want to do is say somebody's property worth $200 and appraisal comes in $350 and we don't have enough money. So you pad it kind of up here. It's no different what we're having to do with Branson. The problem is I try to get people to think reality. If you had it on the market for $800 and it didn't sell, what you got to look at is we're asking an appraiser to look at values today, not what they were, not what you think they are in reality. We know we got a little softer market, but guys, I personally have looked at structures in the surrounding Tri-Lakes area here, and I've seen some that have been a great bargain because of there was probably a really motivated reason for the seller, and I've seen others test in the market. And I don't have to go any further in my condo group, you know. So somebody's testing the market. In reality here, if you want to participate and you're eligible to participate, you guys will determine, do you want to use the appraisal approach? If you use the appraisal approach, there needs to be an appeal approach. So we say, okay, we get one appraisal. If you don't like that value, we'll get one more and we'll average the two. That's the appeal approach.
I thought that process, and not questioning what you said there, but I thought the process was they did have a chance to appeal with one appraisal, and whatever SEMA or FEMA has on their document, that appraisal approach is somewhere between that and the first appraisal. That's what was explained to us at Branson at a meeting that we talked about, and I think Sheila was the one that said.
Well, it wouldn't be what the state or FEMA, because state or FEMA doesn't determine value, but you're right, they would get a chance to get a second appraisal.
Maybe that, I mean, from what we turn in is what FEMA and SEMA's going to use versus their appeal, which is one appraisal, uh-huh. And somewhere in between there is what they might reach.
Right.
But to cut to the chase here, we need some help with this situation because this thing is way too complicated for us to sit up here and try to figure this out. I think your presentation has been absolutely great as far as opening my eyes to see that we need some assistance in doing this. I understand as you make your talk that you are doing this for the city of Branson.
Correct.
Yes.
Gentlemen, how do you think we need to approach this?
Well, I think that, first of all, we need to take some people off the list. If that's not their primary residence, this program doesn't apply. Is that correct?
There's
seven or eight on this list that are not the primary residence. They need to be notified. They do not apply. It doesn't work. So you need to let them know that that's not even a hope. There's others. There's also two additional ones. There's one on the substantial, and there's multiple on the non-substantial. They need to be notified in letter that they don't qualify for this program, therefore take them off the list. There's two that you haven't identified that are unknown. We have to make that determination ASAP.
Yes.
What I'm hearing from Mickey is, Mr. Davis, is that if they're not at 40-plus percent in the non-substantial, they really don't have a chance, even in a good, perfect world. So I think we need to make a determination is, if you're not at a certain point anyway, then really there's no reason to even give them false sense of hope, because all it's going to do is hurt the overall ratio study.
And that was my whole intent with providing this in a database. I wanted to give some type of ranking or some ability to rank these properties because, I wanted to put that on one sheet where we could see this all on one piece of paper. And that was my whole intent, was just to kind of show where we're at, who we've talked to.
Are majority of the substantial damage interested?
We have
yes.
Or
yes.
Do we know?
I've only got one that's not, that's substantially damaged. All the rest are.
And I'm not saying that some of these are in 30, couldn't BCA out. I'm just saying that if they're not above, up in the 40s, you couldn't even amend it and probably didn't amend, but I'm not saying you couldn't BCA it. But if you wanted us to, if you thought they'd come in, and we could do it over a couple of days, I'd be more than glad to sit down, Bob, and you send the deal out and say, if you want to come in, and I can cut through real quick with them. I mean, you know,
yeah.
Guys, here's how we determine fair market value. What do you think? Here's the numbers we got. And try to help get to where Mr. Strappis is saying is, do you really know and do you really want to attempt to be in it? And then you could come back with a report and say.
Here's one last question, because we've got less than 10 minutes here.
I understand.
One last question is, primary residence, we're in a tourism area.
Mm-hmm.
Primary residence is a big issue. How is that determined? Is it on your honesty program? I mean, I'm looking at these contact info
mm-hmm.
for a phone number. 1, 2, 3, 4. Four of the nine are not in state. Okay, one's unknown, and one's not. Everybody admits that it's not a primary. So, how do we? What's the factor for determining if it's a primary residence or not?
I will. In the morning, I'll send you a little statement. And the reason I say that, that's been asked, and there's what we call policy letters FEMA's done.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to review a couple of policy letters. I'm not avoiding your question. I just don't.
That's a factor.
It's a very tricky question.
We had three town hall meetings. Those came up every question. And every time I heard a different response from the potential, from the flood, those affected by the flood.
Uh-huh.
And then I've heard different responses from SEMA and FEMA to a point where there's got to be an official. I mean, I know you say, oh, it's probably on your taxes, but are we what this
is? Well, it's not really on their taxes, though.
Well,
you're registered to vote.
Yeah.
I'll give you what's in the guideline, and I'll try to pull it off the computer tonight.
We have different options, at least I think, that are available to us. First, we're down to 20 days before, is it the LOI, is that what it's called?
NOI.
Yeah,
notice
of interest is due. This gentleman represents a company and has been through this process and these procedures, it sounds like, a number of times. If you get on the internet, you're not going to find many other people that are very close to the state of Missouri that offer the services that your company does out of Kansas, at least not that I've found. There is competition out there. We have the ability to look at, well, number one, we're faced with the bidding laws, but there are some options that we have outside of the bidding laws, sole source provider, working with other political subdivisions, mm-hmm. such as the city of Branson. I would like, if you all will bless me with the opportunity and give me the ability to work with these two gentlemen, to work with this gentleman, to come back with a proposal to you two immediately. If that's amenable, I'm very interested in having you help us and work with us and carry this
absolutely
forward from this point forward.
100%.
Yeah, we
and when you tie that together with the fact the city of Branson's already involved, then we're going to have consistency of approach, at least, with all the properties that are within Taney County. And I think that's really important.
And you got the nod from me, Ron, to go ahead and work with them and try to. And we've got to expedite this and move it along.
Exactly.
And we,
exactly.
So just comment, ending comment, we want you to follow all your procedures. We're not a company that comes in. To be very honest with you, on these sizes, where we get competition is when they get up about over 100. And to be honest with you, they bid them in Kansas in three places, or two places that had 120 apiece. Had one competitor one place and the other didn't, and it was out for a posting for 30 days. So I'm not going to say there isn't, and FEMA likes to see. So you work that out, we will work with you. We will provide you competitive pricing, whether we have competition or not. Our job is not to look at what the market will bear. We know what we have to do.
I have to find an option because under bidding laws, if I wait 15 days, we've got 5 days left in which to do something at the end of the bidding procedure. That's before the NOI is due. That's not enough time. And so I want to work with you gentlemen to find an option to bring these gentlemen. And we need to do that ASAP. And if he has time, I know you're meeting with City of Branson this afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
If he has time this morning for you two to start to sit down, we start BOE here in 5 minutes.
Okay.
So I can't be with you right now, but let's come up with some ideas and some thoughts with him and come back to a short list proposal to me. I'll
okay.
try to get away either over the lunch hour or it'd have to be this evening, but is that acceptable with you all?
Definitely.
Is that acceptable
yes,
to you, sir?
And I'm in town, so I'm going to have breaks. So let's do that. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you,
appreciate
sir, very much for being here. Taney County Commission will stand in adjournment. We will open BOE at 9 a.m., hopefully sharp.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Good question.